Welcome to the IGIS Institute Sounds of Safety podcast, where our community will be delving into a series of critical issues supporting the public sector mission space. On this episode of the IGIS Sounds of Safety podcast, we welcome back the chair of the Cybersecurity Working Group, Larry Zorio, to spearhead an informative discussion with valued member of the IGIS community and chair of the IGIS Information Technology and Architecture Committee, Paul Wormley. Listen in as the two of them discuss the impact of knowledge graph technology as a possible benefit to justice and public safety operations in a new series focusing on emerging technologies in the public sector mission space. Let's hand it over to Larry and Paul for more.
Every day, you're making life and death decisions, managing complex cases, and trying to connect the dots faster than ever. But what if the answers you need were right in front of you, hidden in the data you already have? In this episode, we're diving into knowledge graphs, the game-changing technology that's helping law enforcement uncover connections, solve cases faster, and stay ahead of the curve. Stick around to learn how this tool can give your agency the edge you didn't know you needed. I am your host, Larry Zorio, and I have with me Paul Wormley, chairman of the IGIS Institute's Information Technology and Architecture Advisory Committee. Paul, welcome to the show. Before we get into this very interesting topic, why don't you take just 30 seconds and introduce yourself and what you've been up to?
Thank you, Larry. It's a delightful occasion to be with you to talk about this important topic, and I appreciate your introductory comments on it. My whole history has been involved with information sharing. I was a deputy administrator of the Law Enforcement Assistance Administration and the Department of Justice at one point, and I helped start the IGIS Institute some years ago. I was the executive director for 8 years, and I'm now the executive director emeritus, and they kind of asked me to come back and run this committee of really about emerging technology. And our job on this committee is to try to help inform both government agencies and technologists about the emerging technologies that are out there that can make a difference in your life and how you can improve your mission effectiveness. And that's really what we're trying to do. So that's one of the topics that we want to talk about today.
All right. Well, this is certainly an emerging technology, knowledge graphs. And I want to get into this because I think it's important that everybody who's listening kind of understand what this technology is. They're probably going to start hearing it more and more. You know, we all hear about AI. We don't necessarily hear about knowledge graphs. But Paul, I know you've been banging my door down for the past like 6 months saying, Larry, we need to be doing more at IGIS with knowledge graphs. We need to be doing a podcast about it. We need to be putting out materials about it. So let's get into it. And let's just start with, what is knowledge graph technology?
Well, thank you for asking us. That's the important question.
And yes.
I want to start by telling you, as I've probably mentioned to you before in our prior conversations, that this amounts to a revolution in information technology in the justice field. Really, it's being found in other disciplines to be a revolutionary approach, and we need to figure out how to make it work for us in justice. What it is it's kind of a very simple concept, actually. For the last 50 years, all of the information systems that we've built, in not just in justice and public safety, but everywhere, have been built around this idea of a relational database where we store data in rows and columns and tables. And, you know, the idea of SQL, the sequential storage of data, we put data in tables and we connect those tables by having the same data element in two tables that link them. Mm-hmm. But there's no knowledge in those tables. We just have the data elements. The rows, the instances, and the columns are the data elements themselves, and we plug data into them, and we try to make sense out of all that. Well, some years ago, when we started building cloud-based systems in particular, people said, you know what? We really care about the data more than we care about the documents themselves. The documents have been just like something that we use to house the data that we're trying to communicate. And we focused on sending documents to each other, but we don't care really about the documents as much as we care about what's in those documents. And if we stored data differently and we put the data together where every data element was linked to every other data element in terms of imparting the knowledge about what's the relationship. But so the relationship between a person and their age or their address or their work occupation or whatever those connections are, if we stored the data that defined those relationships, then we would add knowledge to our data store. Not just store the data, but say, what in the heck are these two things connected by? Well, a city is a political subdivision of a state. We stored that link between those two data elements, city and state, as well as the data elements for every data element that's of interest to you. Then we have knowledge, and we can make systems smarter. And most importantly, we can develop insights into the data that we've never had before, because we can discover relationships when we do that. So people started building these things called knowledge graphs, where they store each data element connected to every other data element and the relationship between them. That's the whole notion behind a knowledge graph. And you can display that as a graph. You can draw little circles and connect the lines and say, okay, city is a part of a state. Or Paul Warmly is an instructor at George Washington University, or whatever those connections are. You know, that's how you define the relationships. And one really key to this is that if you define a model for how those relationships are built, we call that an ontology, where we actually show the relationship in the data that you're collecting between all those data elements. And we ensure that every entry follows that ontology, that model design. And that's, of course, one of the things that makes it of interest to IGIS, is because one of the ways to build a knowledge graph that is appropriate for the justice world is to use the standards that we've been involved in for years called NEAM, and NEAM Open in particular. If we use that NEAM model to define those relationships, it's like the easiest way to talk about it is to create an overlay over all of the different data that you're concerned about in your enterprise. You're talking about a police department or a prosecutor agency or the whole criminal justice system. You define that model of that ontology, that overlay, and think of it as a way to connect many, many different sources of data that are hard to connect before.
Let me play this back just so I understand. And I want to use like a really simple analogy. You have like people, you have locations, you have vehicles, you have like events that have happened. And we can use knowledge graph to connect that all. And the example I was thinking of is like John Doe is connected to a blue sedan. And a blue sedan is connected to a crime scene. So therefore, knowledge graph can very quickly identify for whoever's investigating a crime that John Doe has this blue sedan. That blue sedan is connected to this crime scene. Boom, there you go. John Doe, you should go and look at John Doe and investigate him. Is that a good kind of simple analogy of this, Paul?
Well, it's better than that.
Ooh, better than that. All right. Okay. All right. How is it better?
It's not just that there's a connection between them, but what's the nature of that connection? Mm. You want to know that John Doe is the driver or the owner or the purchaser or...
Yep, deeper and deeper.
You store that relationship with the data, not just the fact that there's a connection.
Right.
You know, you could build, in the old model of the way we build databases, we could say there's a connection between those two, but we don't know what that connection is. With knowledge graphs, you use that definition, that overlay, the model, to say, what are the possible connections? Is he a driver? Is he an owner? Is he a passenger? And this is very important when it comes to investigation that you just used as the example. That detective wants to know, if this guy's just a passenger in the car, he's probably not the driver who caused that accident, right? But if he's a driver, now you're talking about, maybe that requires further investigation. So
yeah,
we put the knowledge in the database itself so that we have context for what happens. So we can understand the relationship between people and vehicles and places and events and all of those things that are important to decide what to do about it.
And I'm sure the listeners are thinking about just their daily lives and them trying to like do this on their own. And they have, oh boy, let's call it a dozen or more technologies that they're using on a daily basis to go through an investigation like this on their own. I could see something like Knowledge Graph. If you're doing that behind the scenes in the database, you no longer have to have these 12 systems flipping, you know, from screen to screen to screen, writing down this data element. So it could be like a real kind of time saver and efficiency gain here, right, Paul?
Absolutely. You're hitting right on it. We talk about it as one piece of glass, you know, one piece of glass, one screen that gives you access to all of that data. Knowledge graphs really shine when you're looking at the importance of connecting the data between multiple different data sources. For example, in a typical police department of any size at all, you're going to have multiple systems that you're going to have to go look at as you're doing an investigation. You know, you got data, everything from the dispatch system to ShotSpotter to the video cameras, the body-worn cameras, the surveillance cameras, all of that video imagery. You've got some facial recognition systems out there. You've got all kinds of different systems you want to bring together and connect the dots, right? Knowledge Graph connects the dots for you. So you have one query you can make and say, Larry Zorio has all these different involvements. Yeah, we saw him in a surveillance video outside of the drugstore that just got robbed, and then pull all that data together.
Where would like the central location of this be? Like, what would be like the brains of this?
The brains of it are in a server.
Okay.
You could build these things. More and more, you'll build it in the cloud, but you can have a private cloud on your own premise, in your own department, under your own control, or you can use the public cloud.
Yep.
And one of the reasons that we can do all this stuff now that we couldn't do this years ago is that we have standards. The World Wide Web Consortium created standards for how you build knowledge graphs, and the things called RDF and OWL, and these standards that really allow us to put them anywhere. You can put it in a put it on your PC. You can put it on your server in your back room. You can put it on any cloud and put that, and take advantage of connecting the dots across multiple systems. In a medium-sized police department, you're probably going to have as many as 20 different systems that you really want to connect when you get down to it.
So you mentioned medium, because that's funny, because that's where I was going to go. Like, again, I'm always thinking of like the audience and people listening to this, right? You probably have like some skeptics that are listening to this saying, well, I can't do this. This sounds like, you know, this is for the big agencies in the United States. This is for the NYPDs. This is for the federal agencies that have the big pockets and the big budgets and the big staff. Is that what it takes to do this? Or talk to me about kind of how anyone can approach this. Like, can anybody tackle this?
The question is it applicable even to a small agency? And the very small agencies, maybe not. Maybe it's too much, because it really shines when you have multiple different data sources. And if you're a two-man department in Okefenokee, Georgia, and you know you only have one PC that you're collecting some NIBRS data on, that's not going to help you a whole lot. But as soon as you get to maybe 10 or 20 officers and you're starting to think about, you know, doing things like license plate readers and in-car videos and body-worn cameras and those kinds of things, now you're talking about the need to connect the dots. And if you're a county in particular, and you're trying to figure out a way to create interoperability between law enforcement, prosecutor, courts, and corrections, now you're really looking at how can we let all those people keep their systems themselves and create this overlay. All they got to do is make their data accessible and stop worrying about building a big, fat database in the sky. People in the past have been in smaller agencies, small to medium-sized agencies, have been really reluctant to do the kind of information sharing because everybody thought we had to build one single big computer and put all our data in it.
Right.
With knowledge graph, you don't have to do that. Everybody can keep their own data, leave it where it is. Mm. Just make it accessible by having this overlay of the ontology that I talked about, saying, here's how all those things relate to each other. Now I can make a query and query all those systems at once. Think about a regional criminal justice information system like ArGIS in San Diego or system in St. Louis that Regis, you know, that has 50 different law enforcement agencies that want to share data and whatnot. You put it, create a knowledge graph to tie them all together, and now you can really find out about that guy who's the silver-haired burglar who's been, you know, stealing jewelry from 20 different jurisdictions and spotted in 14 different places and saying, wow, this is the guy we're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
The idea of aggregating data from multiple different sources. So even if you're a small agency, there's some really good regional small systems that I've been to in Illinois and Wisconsin, where there's, you know, 10 or 20 small agencies, each of whom maybe have 8 to 10 officers, but they've combined to create an integrated system, regional RMS, that they want to collect the data sources like license plate readers and other things right. that they want to pull together. Knowledge graph empowers that kind of aggregation in ways. We could build a system, a statewide system, that collected the data from every law enforcement agency in the state using knowledge graph, but you would never have to send all the data to it. You just provide access to it.
Sure. Yeah, you have an API connection and that's it.
Exactly. And the NEAM API becomes very important because, and anybody can use that to answer your basic okay. question. Can anybody do this? Yes. There are public domain knowledge graph models out there. One popular one, just to give you an example, Neo4j is an open source knowledge graph model that you can get your hands on. You have to acquire some knowledge on how to do this, and you have to figure out how to do that. You can also, for free, get the NEAM APIs, and the new NEAM model, NEAM Open API that's coming out now is perfectly fitted to let you exploit knowledge graph, because the new model, it operates on a common model format that creates a technology agnostic way. And actually, you can have RDF outputs using this new common model object in NEAM now, which leads you to build a data graph. So anybody can do this. Frankly, you can do it in your backyard, so to speak, if you really spend the time learning about yeah. how to do it.
Could you also, you know, for those that are still like, well, geez, maybe we're speaking to that very small agency that you mentioned that only has 2 officers, right? Couldn't you lean on your vendors to help you do this too?
You're anticipating my next point. I was just yeah. going to say that.
Okay, look at that.
The companies in this field are increasingly mm-hmm. going to be looking at creating knowledge graph-based systems for yeah. criminal justice because it's so powerful to do this linking and focus on data. Even the director of the CJIS division in the FBI at a recent IJIS meeting got up and said, you know what? I want to build a data fabric for people. That's what he said. Now, Paul Wormley talks about this as knowledge graph, and maybe that's the right thing, but it's really what I want to think about as a data fabric where we can connect agencies with each other and the data across yes. the criminal justice spectrum. His vision is a really knowledge graph-based vision. Now, as doesn't exist at a state or federal level yet, but he's thinking about it. CJIS is excited about the potential of connecting the dots. I've been, you know, doing this for a long time, Larry, and when I go around the country and talk to police chiefs and prosecutors and judges and whatnot, eventually they all get around to saying, you know, I got all these damn computers out here and they can't talk to each other. And why can't you guys connect the dots for me? Well, now we can, chief or judge.
Mm-hmm.
We can connect the dots, and your software provider can do that if you ask them to.
Sure.
You know,
yep.
The people are going to come to your company and others and say, mm-hmm. hey, you know, why don't you guys do this? Because I want to see a way to connect these dots. And by the way, I don't want to spend a fortune on it.
Yeah. This is great. So you mentioned that you've kind of traveled the country and talked to different people about this topic or just data sharing in general. Have you seen any good examples of organizations or agencies actually doing this? If so, can you kind of share any of those examples with us?
Sure. First of all, let me say that a lot of these applications, early days of Knowledge Graph, were in the pharmaceutical industry and the banking industry for fraud detection, which, of course, has an analogy in law enforcement, right? People that are doing the bank fraud and insurance fraud, many of them are using Knowledge Graph technology. Even in the Department of Housing and Urban Development, they've built a homeless information system now nationwide. It's built on Knowledge Graphs. And then healthcare, there's a number of examples of systems taking advantage of this, particularly where you have multiple data sources that you're interested in. But in the justice world, one of the best examples today is Sonoma County, California. Sonoma County is building a new criminal justice system to replace their aging old criminal justice system to connect the sheriff, the DA, the public defender, the probation department, every element of criminal justice using a knowledge graph. And it's unbelievably powerful because it's coupled with using NEEM as the basis for building the ontology on this to define this whole thing we call the criminal justice system. And you know there's no such thing as the criminal justice system, right? It's more of an enterprise of agencies involved in criminal justice. So we have to think about that enterprise. And if you're going to think about an enterprise information system, Knowledge Graph is the perfect way to do that because you have all these different sources. In Sonoma County, the sheriff has its own RMS. Prosecutor has their own system. The courts have a statewide system. And linking them all together through a Knowledge Graph allows any user in any of those agencies to make on one screen, one piece of glass, have access to all the data and the whole system that's of interest to them for decision-making purposes. So if you're a judge and you want to know all the involvements that Larry Zorio has had in this entire enterprise, one screen lets you do that. Or look at the events, the details of an event that Larry Zorio was involved with one of the agencies, bring it up on one screen.
Wow.
And connect it all and never have to go out and suck that data into your own system.
Right.
Because all we're doing is providing a universal way to access it in a standardized, controlled way with strong privacy connections, with strong connections to protect the cybersecurity built all into this so that you know who's using the system, and you know you can protect the data down to the data element level without any hesitation.
This is a great example. So it feels like you have some kind of firsthand knowledge of this Sonoma County example. Do you have any stats yet on just efficiencies gained or anything, time savings? I'm just curious, like, what they're seeing maybe now that they've been using it for a bit of time.
Well, it's not fully implemented yet. They're doing it in stages. So they don't really haven't gotten to the point of making those kinds of measurements. But I'm trying to urge them, and I'm working with the National Institute of Justice and the Bureau of Justice Statistics to try to convince them to do a case study to do exactly what you're talking about.
Yes.
Measure the return on investment with this.
I see a future podcast guest coming on to talk about this. Someone from Sonoma County. I think that would be a great episode.
We had the director of innovation from Sonoma who came to our IJIS Institute summit on AI recently and did a presentation, which is why I know more about it. And she is no expert in criminal justice, and she admits that, but she's extremely smart about the technology, and she's really sort of driven making this happen. And the people in the justice world are thrilled and delighted because they're getting things they could never do before and getting insights. Let me give you an example. Suppose, you know, one of the things that we always worry about is whether or not the prosecutor really can file a case that the police bring to him, you know, because do they really have probable cause for this arrest? Do they really have the evidence that will lead to, you know, a conviction? The prosecutor doesn't want to waste time, but they're not going to get a conviction, right? You can use this system to analyze whether you have probable cause in the elements of the case, whether you have the connection between evidence that you need in order to make this case. You can find things out that you couldn't find any other way between the various data elements. And by the way, one of the things that's important and to tie this together is they're using generative AI to let you ask questions in natural language. You don't have to learn how to write SQL queries or some language to get data out of this. You can use a ChatGPT to formulate a query, write a query in natural English, and have it translate into the specialized query language that goes into the knowledge graph to get the answer and put it back on that one piece of glass without having to go to seven different systems to get the answer to your
That's
question.
beautiful. So you mentioned Neem and you mentioned a couple other standards. Is there guidance material out there for people to get started? Is it simply going to Neem? Like, what are some other examples you have for the audience?
One of the reasons I'm excited about this is there are a number of companies who are specializing in building these knowledge graph technologies and providing them. And several of them have really good tutorials on their websites. I'll mention one, just I'm not endorsing them in any way, shape, or form, but the company called Cambridge Semantics. You can look up their website. They have a free book on knowledge graphs and the emerging technology of knowledge graphs, which really explains the whole thing really well. And all you got to do is put your name in there and download it. It does require you to register, but all that means is you'll get a few ads from them, but then you can disconnect if you want to. But it's a really good book. And there are other sources available. I am getting more impressed with the ability, Larry, and you know this too, with some of the new generative AI applications to go and find and ask questions and learn from them. I've been impressed lately with one called Perplexity, and you can go to Perplexity and ask the question, what is knowledge graph? And it'll give you a whole bunch of other related questions and resources that you can go to. And the thing about Perplexity is it also gives you citations to go read. So you can do some work to learn about this and whatever, and talk to these companies. They're all eager to talk to you about what knowledge graph can do for you and read the stuff that's on the web.
Well, with you being, the chairman of the ITAC, the Information Technology and Architecture Advisory Committee, like I feel like this is a perfect opportunity for the ITAC, Paul. Like, what is the ITAC doing around Knowledge Graph to help the community?
Well, we're committed to providing educational and learning opportunities for people to understand how this technology may apply to them. So we're starting to build a series of emerging technology briefs, and this is one of the first ones that'll come out. It'll be just a, two or three pages kind of covering what we've covered today in this discussion. We'll also provide some links and references to where you can learn more and also talk about some of the challenges and things you should be to avoid making mistakes with this stuff.
Okay. All right. Well, that's something to look forward to. That's probably another future episode. Maybe when that launches, we'll get back on and we can talk in more detail about that. That's great. All right. So we're getting towards the end here, and I always want to leave the audience with like they can go and take some action. So to put you on the spot a bit here, what are two or three tips that you have for a listener to get started tomorrow on this?
Well, the first thing is to learn more about it than we have time to talk about in this thing. So tip number one is take advantage of the internet, take advantage of, generative AI or whatever you want to just ask the basic questions. What is knowledge graph? And what are the applications in available to you? What are the examples of good use? You can do that with any one of the generative AI apps, with ChatGPT or Perplexity or Gemini or whatever. So learn a little bit. Look up the companies. Ask the question again using generative AI. What companies provide knowledge graph technologies? And go to their websites and look at some of the tutorials that they have. There's lots of them out there now that explain some of this stuff because companies are really getting. I'll tell you one thing that makes me excited about this, Larry, is that Gartner Group, which is kind of one of the premier companies that does research on the trends in technology. And they made a statement about a year or so ago that knowledge graph technology is being used in maybe 5 to 10% of all the applications across all disciplines. But in 3 to 5 years, it'll be 80%.
Whoa, that's a bold prediction right there.
Yeah, that struck me as that maybe that's something we better figure out whether Justice can use this crap or
Yes,
not,
I need to put it on my to-do list.
Yeah, right. So it's on our to-do list, and I just is going to keep providing information on it, and we're going to have you know, presentations at our IGIS symposia. There's no question about it. It's a coming way to aggregate data for across multiple systems, particularly where you have a lot of relationships, like criminal justice, where the person is the unit of count as you pass through the whole criminal justice system. And we need person-centric systems to describe how we're administering justice in America. And this is a way to help us be more efficient. And by the way, a lot of this can be done using a lot of open source software as the basis for how you do this.
Oh, that's good.
So you're a lot of advantages to moving forward with it. And the final tip I'll tell you is that contact your software provider and demand that they explain to you why they're not using Knowledge Graph.
That's a good one. That's a good one. You actually stole mine. That's the one I was going to bring up. I wrote down challenge your vendors. That's what I wrote down. So yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. You should be pushing your technology vendors, right? And you know, you're pushing them on AI right now. And Paul just said 10% of people are using it today, but 80%, Gartner saying 80% within the next 5 years. Yeah. You need to start asking now. You need to start preparing for this, because
we know how long it takes for innovations to reach into the criminal justice world. And
yeah, and sadly, it takes a while. Yes.
If the banks and healthcare and insurance companies are using it now, then we need to figure out how we can take advantage of it and take advantage of their investments in this technology.
Well, I mean, around your adoption comment, Paul, you kind of hit on it at the beginning of the episode. I think cloud adoption is going to be big towards leveraging this technology. So, I mean, look at your vendors, look at, you know, who you're using in the cloud, maybe look at your critical vendors, the ones that you know you would want some of that data matched up with, and kind of question, is this technology advanced enough? Are they in the cloud? Do they have the ability to use these supercomputers that are in the cloud to better satisfy your needs? All right, so that is great. I've already written down like three different topics to discuss in the future around knowledge graphs. So everybody stay tuned for the ITAC, Paul and the ITAC. And I'm humbled and honored that I actually sit on the ITAC with Paul as well. So I will be involved in these future documents and webinars and everything else that are going to be coming out from IGIS. So stay tuned to that, everybody, and stay tuned to more podcasts around this and certainly other topics. I know Paul's been certainly planning for next year and kind of what we want to cover in the ITAC. And there's a lot of topics on his agenda, and we'll be pushing out more of these podcasts in the future. Paul, we just got like a minute left. Is there any kind of closing thoughts before we end the show for today?
Well, I would just encourage everybody to remember that technology is a never-ending challenge. As it changes, we have to step up to understand how it impacts us. In some respects, whether we like it or not, technology is always going to be ahead of the game. And it's incumbent upon all of us who care about the justice field, whether we're in it or supporting it as industry, to understand that we have to take advantage of the next generation and not just rest on our laurels, because society changes, the world changes. And if we don't step up to do it, the people we fight all the time will take advantage of us.
They certainly will. They certainly will. All right. That's a great way to end it. All right, everybody. So tune in to our next episode and take care. All right. Bye, everybody.
Thank you for tuning into today's episode of the Sounds of Safety podcast. Be sure to stay connected with the IGIS Institute on LinkedIn and X. And don't forget to subscribe on Apple Music, Spotify, or your preferred podcast platform to catch future episodes. From cybersecurity to artificial intelligence and deep dives into critical national data sharing initiatives, the Sounds of Safety podcast has you covered. Until next time.